on the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes, subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Are we exposed? Security teams ask this every day. Vulnerabilities across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos hide the truth, and attackers are watching. Tenable unifies your tools, teams, and data so you can spot and close risks fast. Tenable's AI-powered exposure management gives teams one view of risk, helping them focus, take action, and close critical exposures fast. Visit Tenable.com. Tenable, your exposure ends here.
You're listening.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details. Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help, you save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
To continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Are you finished?
I am finished. I'm waiting for an answer.
I felt comfortable talking to Rob to let him to know what I was doing. I just felt comfortable sharing that just to let him know what I was up to.
Yeah. So you were sharing with Rob Wood, the prosecuting attorney, that it's your intent to protect the LDS Church with your testimony, right?
I guess you could say that.
Okay.
That wasn't the whole point of the interview, but...
I understand that.
Yeah.
The point of this text was that, right?
I guess so.
Right. And the 340 other texts between May 6th of 2020 and November 4th of 2020, were those just to say hi?
No.
Okay. So in other words, what was happening here is that there was at least some sort of a relationship built between you and this prosecutor about how and when and where you were going to testify about things in this case. Is that right?
Objection, Your Honor. Misstates the testimony.
Sustained.
The point of all this communication between you and Mr. Wood, the prosecuting attorney in this case, was to establish how you planned on testifying in this case and what you were going to say.
It wasn't the established reason why I communicated with him.
And it was just a coincidence then that you happened to mention your church and how you were going to protect your church to the prosecutor who was going to be calling you and examining you as a witness in this case. That's just a coincidence, right?
Objection, Your Honor. Argumentative.
Sustained.
Okay. Judge, I'm going to need to move for admission of Exhibits 6 and 7. These were previously stipulated by the parties, part of the... agreement between the prosecuting attorney and myself about what we would stipulate to in terms of exhibits.
All right, there's been offered exhibits 6 and 7, I believe not. Well, confirm with the clerks, those are not yet entered into admitted. Defense exhibits 6 and 7, not yet admitted. Is the state aware of what these are, and is there any objection once you've reviewed them, please?
Thank you, Your Honor. I was just double-checking defense exhibit list. It's my understanding that this is the Lori Freestyle at iCloud and also the Lolly Time at iCloud, the Cellbright of those. If that is what those are, they are stipulated to and there's no objection.
That's what they are, Judge. And the subparts that go with it, I believe under 6, it's A through F. And then 7 is like A through D, I think, Judge.
All right, counsel, I'm going to have a quick sidebar with you to make sure we don't duplicate numbers or clearly mark, and I'll have our clerk join in on the sidebar just as we get in on defense exhibits. All right, counsel, thanks for the sidebar. Just clarifying our exhibits here. what is being offered, and I believe stipulated to by the state, would be Defense Exhibit 6A through AA. And on that set of exhibits, does the state stipulate those may be admitted?
Yes, Your Honor. With those clarifications, the state would agree that the Cellbrite, the iClouds themselves are already in, and these are content from those iCloud accounts.
Okay. And that will be admitted, and the court will ensure that only what is admissible through that comes in and is observed or given to the jurors for deliberation. Likewise, there is Defense Exhibit 7, and that consists of two subparts, 7A and B. Also, does the state agree to the admission of 7A and B?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We'll take the same precaution with those before they're submitted for deliberation. With that, then, Mr. Pryor, if you'd like to continue, you may.
Thank you, Judge. Oh, thank you. Now, what I want to do next is go through a little bit of a timeline, if we could, okay? You met Lori in mid to late October of 2018.
At the beginning of October.
Oh, was it the beginning of October?
Yes.
And that was, you were, and what I'm unclear about is that you were either a teacher or an instructor at a religious institution, right?
I was just invited to teach a segment of something.
Okay, and do you recall what that segment was that you were teaching?
It was about health and nutrition and preparedness ideas associated with those.
Judge, may we approach?
Yes. All right, counsel, we're continuing. Just now, apparently there was published to the jurors something that may have had information that was inadvertently published that was not to be given to the jurors. So with what was just published potentially on your monitors or the large screen here, I am going to instruct the jurors to disregard what they saw or anything that was read on there that may have been inadvertently published. It wasn't the intention of counsel to do that or the court to allow it. So whatever you may have read or seen on that, please disregard that and do not consider that in any way in your deliberations or consider it as any evidence in this case. We'll try to work through that issue as additional information may be submitted or published and be cautious when publishing anything, counsel. With that in mind, Mr. Pryor, once you're ready, you can continue with your cross-examination.
Thank you, Judge. So October of 2018, at some point, and you're saying, I think I said mid, but you're saying early of 2018, you met Lori Vallow.
Correct.
And from previous testimony, you discussed statements you made that you discussed that you would talk to her almost regularly.
Correct.
Now, today, you talked about the fact that you spoke with her almost regularly up until January of 2019. Is that correct?
Yeah. Like a daily occurrence until, I'm not sure exactly when it started changing, but
okay.
I would say somewhere between January and February.
And then she started what you described as moving around a little bit?
Correct.
Okay. And when she was moving around, let's talk a little bit about that. When she was with you, she was in Arizona?
When she was with me? When I met her?
When you first met her in October, that was somewhere right. In Arizona, right?
Right.
And she was there, you folks were there at the same vicinity up until the first part of January. Is that fair?
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah. And then did she move somewhere around the 1st of January?
I remember she had the first house. It was either Chandler or Gilbert. I get confused. Okay. They're right beside each other. And then she moved to another house, you know, maybe within less than half an hour away from there.
Okay. And during that time, you weren't seeing each other every day then at that point, correct?
When she moved to the second house?
Yes.
I don't know. We saw each other often. I don't know how at that point. I don't remember.
Okay. You don't remember. Okay. And then at that point, after that second house, then where did she go?
She went to Hawaii.
And that was around February 1st, right?
It was in February. I don't recall when she actually flew out there.
So if I were to represent to you that around February 1st to the end of March, Lori Vallow was living in Hawaii, is that something that you would have any reason to disagree with?
It could be true.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. And then when she's living in Hawaii from February 1st of 2019 till the end of March, how often did you see each other in person?
Oh, just once.
Okay. Saw each other once. Tylee was out there at one point as well, right?
Prior to me coming, yes.
Okay. And please excuse me, but your relationship with Tylee would be described as not the best. Would that be fair?
I would just say no relationship.
Okay. And that's what you've previously said. There just wasn't any relationship, right?
That's right.
You folks didn't particularly care to be around each other.
That's not true. It just didn't.
Okay. Just no relationship.
Right.
So when you testify that you met her a couple of times, I think is what you said earlier today. Is that right?
A few times I've been around her.
Okay. It wasn't of anything of any substance, correct?
Correct.
So anything she would have said or not said to you, it wasn't anything of any significance, correct?
She wasn't talking to me.
Okay. Okay. That's no relationship.
Objection, Your Honor. Strike the narrative.
Sustained.
Well, during that February 1st to the end of March, how often would you talk to Lori on the phone?
I am not sure.
Okay. You don't remember?
I don't remember.
Would you? You would have remembered if it was every single day, right?
It's been too long for me to recall that.
Okay. Okay. And would you agree with me that your memory would have been better closer to the incident than it would be this much time later, right?
I believe so.
And you would agree with me that if you were to give any kind of a statement close in time to when these events took place, they would have been more accurate than statements that maybe you're making today?
Yeah, maybe a little bit more.
Okay. Well, you acknowledged to me that you have difficulty getting facts straight and information straight.
Objection, Your Honor. Misstates the testimony and it's a narrative. Sustain. Move to strike.
Sustain and strike that.
Okay. You testified earlier that you sometimes don't remember things correctly.
That's right.
Okay. Is it possible today that you're suffering from that today as part of your testimony?
I think it's a general forgetting because when you go have a relationship with somebody, you don't remember every detail of it. I think it's a normal forgetting.
But you were pretty detailed in your testimony today, specific about a lot of things.
Objection, Your Honor. Move to strike. There's no question.
There is a question.
Well sustained. It wasn't a question, Mr. Pryor. It's just a statement. It's argumentative. Go ahead with a question, please.
So what you're telling me is that your testimony today is based on, to the best of your recollection, what you remember happened back several years ago, right?
Yes.
And that today you're not influenced by your difficulty remembering things sometimes today, right? Just for today.
Well, the same. Objection, Your Honor, argumentative.
Sustain. Ask another question, please, Mr. Pryor.
You're not suffering through your testimony today of the issue we talked about you being somewhat forgetful, right?
It's a hard way to answer that question because of the things that we're talking about today I've shared so often that those are the things that I remember.
Okay. Okay. And we're going to get to that a little bit about some of the things. Now, after the end of March, then where did Lori go?
I know she at one point was with Alex, and I can't recall exactly when that was, but it was prior to her going to Texas.
Was with Alex somewhere?
Yeah, she went to Alex's house.
Where did Alex live?
In his house.
What town?
It's either Queen Creek or Santan. Arizona.
That's in Arizona. And then at some point she went to Texas. Is that what you were saying?
I just remembered she went to she had another house she went to. I'm just trying to remember where that fit in.
Okay. In any event, she was moving around quite a bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if I go back to February through March, February 1st through the end of March, when Lori was in Hawaii, and she was in a place called Kauai?
Correct.
One of those islands over there?
Correct.
Okay, she was with Tylee for at least a portion of that, right?
I believe Tylee, and I think she had a friend with her too, Tylee's friend and her. Okay. That's my memory.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But JJ was with the father, Charles, correct?
I would assume.
Okay, you don't know.
I haven't thought about it.
Okay, so you don't know where JJ was at this point?
I probably knew that then.
Okay.
Yeah.
You knew that then? You just don't recall now, right?
I haven't thought about it. I don't recall.
Okay. Okay. So for a two-month period, Lori didn't have JJ with her when she was in Hawaii. JJ, at least we think, was with Charles for that two-month period.
I would say so.
Okay. Okay. And were you aware that there were divorce proceedings filed by Charles at some point?
I was aware of that.
Okay. Were you also aware that subsequent to those divorce proceedings, there was a reconciliation between Charles and Lori?
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay. And at that point, they were contemplating getting back together and trying to work on their relationship, right?
I could be. I can't remember exactly the words, but I would say it's possible.
Okay. Well, what I guess if you're talking to your friend every day and this great communication is going on, I would think that a discussion about reconciliation would have been discussed during all those daily conversations.
Objection, Your Honor. Narrative. Move to strike.
Coming.
Was there a discussion about reconciliation between you and Lori after the March visit to Hawaii by Lori?
It's possible.
Okay. You don't remember though, right?
It's just been too long. I haven't sat and thought about that for a while.
Okay. And then at some point subsequent to their reconciliation, do you have any idea where Lori moved to? And I would talk about in June, July, August of 2018.
So the house in, it was either Gilbert or Chandler, Arizona. She moved into another house.
And at that point, were you still maintaining that daily phone discussion with Lori?
I don't know how often we spoke.
You don't remember?
I don't remember. Okay.
So you wouldn't be able to say that you spoke to her every day? You don't actually remember how often?
I don't remember.
Okay. And then at some point, there was an issue with Charles and Lori and Alex in at that Arizona home. You recall that?
Yes.
And that was a situation where you had previously testified that there was an altercation with a bat and Tylee was there. And at some point, Alex went into the bedroom to retrieve his gun because he was feeling threatened.
Correct.
And at that point, it came back and there was a shooting.
Yes, that's what I heard.
And to your recollection, on the premises at that point, Lori Vallow was there at that point?
I'm not sure exactly where she was at that point. She just shared what she shared. I know at some point she took JJ to school.
Right.
But I don't know in between all of that when she left and when she stayed.
Okay. But initially, Lori was there.
Right.
Initially, Tylee was there.
Right.
Initially, JJ was there.
Right.
And initially, Alex was there.
Yes.
And initially, Charles was there.
Correct.
And then after the shooting, or at least at some point, Lori left and took JJ and Tylee somewhere else. Is that what you recall?
I remember something to that nature. I don't know exactly when they left and stayed. I don't remember all that.
Okay. Okay. Now, did you have information about, and just tell me yes or no, did you have information about Lori's financial situation?
Only what she shared with me.
Did she share with you about the life insurance she got as a result of Joseph Ryan's death?
Oh, yes, she did.
Okay, that was a significant amount of money.
I think it was $2,000 a month for Tylee.
Well, I'm talking about the life insurance.
Oh, it seemed like it was about $20,000, if I remember.
Is it possible you're confusing what Alex took to Idaho and what Lori got?
I have no idea what he took to Idaho or if he even did that. That's not my knowledge.
And you didn't have regular communication with Alex Cox. Is that what you're telling me?
Right.
Okay. When I say you didn't have regular communication from October of 2018 until January of 2020, how often would you say you've actually spoke with Alex Cox?
Oh, I couldn't recall.
And Judge, I'm looking at 215. I'm one inquiring of the court as to whether or not you want to take a short. I've got a bit to go, Judge.
I understand. Let me have a quick sidebar with counsel. All right. Thank you, counsel. We are going to go ahead and take a mid-afternoon break here. We'll try to keep this break, if we could, to about 20 minutes, but I understand it takes time for movement of the jurors, et cetera. We'll come back on then, and we're going to try to wrap up with evidence today at 3:15 instead of 3:30. So with that in mind, if we can try to abbreviate the break, we'll do that now.
All right. All right, folks, we'll see you in 20 minutes. Really 15 by the time we open.
Witness the lies.
I didn't lie to you on that polygraph, I promise.
The cover-ups.
I could see his brain on his...
The moments they confessed.
I grabbed one of the kitchen knives.
Outrageous police interrogations.
I know, I forgot the head. I wanted the head.
You have to see to believe.
Oh my God.
Law and Crime Interrogations. Subscribe today.
All right. District Court's beginning session.
Thank you. Please be seated.
And Your Honor, I apologize to do this, but before we bring the jury in, could counsel approach briefly?
Yes. Okay, we're back on the record on KCR 22211623. Before the jurors are brought in, we've got a couple of issues we want to put on the record outside the presence of the jurors relating to making a record about exhibits in this case. The first matter the court would bring up is that earlier in the trial, the court noticed that several of the state's marked proposed exhibits had reference as sort of Bates numbers or other markings on some of those exhibits that referenced the term Valo / Daybell. The court raised a concern sua sponte about a possible appearance of the fact that in Lori Valo's case, the trial's already concluded and she was convicted. I didn't want reference necessarily expressly on all the exhibits to that trial, as some of the jurors may or may not know about that, depending on what they revealed in voir dire. And so the state has thereafter, I think maybe one came in with a reference to Valo on a Bates stamp. The state's been redacting those references as it relates to referencing Valo. From the state, does anyone wish to mention anything further to clarify the record on handling those exhibits and how they've been admitted in the case?
No, that's an accurate representation, Your Honor, and we'll continue to redact those.
Okay.
If there's any left.
All right. So that's the issue there. On other exhibits that came in today, they were offered as defense exhibits 6 and 7. The court, in a sidebar, got together with the evidence clerk as well as staff attorney and counsel to look at those exhibits before they were admitted or published and make sure they were properly marked. It was pointed out that many or most of those exhibits contained improper dialogue, written expressions on them or labels that would not be admissible, descriptions, for example, that were argumentative. And so while the court is permitting the defense to go forward and those exhibits have been admitted, the court is going to ensure that before they're published, they will have those references removed and we won't give those to the jurors for deliberation or publish them unless those references are not included in the actual exhibits. I did make a curative instruction as one exhibit apparently was published briefly to the jurors, and that was the basis of the court's curative instruction for the jurors to disregard that information that may have been descriptive and not evidence in the case. Does the state wish to make any further clarification on, well, I'll start with the defense because those were defense exhibits. Mr. Pryor, anything further on those exhibits and how they were handled today by the court?
Judge, a number of the exhibits have descriptions of what they are in terms of content. And I understand that what I understand is the court just wants the number and the sub number and delete all of the other descriptions, whether the court feels they're inappropriate or not the proper description of that exhibit. I can delete all of those.
Okay. And I do wish those to be not included.
Okay.
Anything further on that issue from the state?
Your Honor, with regard to that issue, I think the state just wants to clarify that the exhibit that was inadvertently shown is actually, to the state's knowledge, not an exhibit. It's not a stipulated to document. We had been talking about specific items that had been pulled from the Cellbrite or the iCloud accounts. The document that was published to the jury was not that. It actually made reference to grand jury proceedings, a preliminary hearing, and Lori Vallow's trial. And then I think it had something marking inconsistent statements, and that was published to the jury. The state does have concerns about that. I recognize the court did give a curative instruction. I think at the outset of this trial, the court gave an instruction to the jurors. They were not supposed to consider Ms. Vallow, whether she had a trial or what any outcome was of any proceedings, and they weren't supposed to speculate. So I think that has now been published to them. I recognize the court has given that curative instruction. It also came to the court's attention that maybe there was a comment made sometime around that same time from counsel to the bailiffs about not touching his computer. So I think we just wanted to make a record of that. But we do recognize the court has given that instruction. But for purposes of appellate reasons, we wanted to make sure that we had a clear record.
And Judge, in response, I don't know that there's anything appropriate for me to direct a bailiff not to touch my computer when I'm stepping away from the podium. In regards to the other things, Judge, somehow those statements may have inadvertently been exposed by way of I should have probably removed the HDMI cord, and I think they were reflecting some of my notes, so I can relay that, but there was no intent to publish that to the jury.
Okay, well, on the second to last point there, well, on your final point, Mr. Pryor, and what the state's argued, what was published, okay, I'll clarify, was not an exhibit, was not evidence. The court did give a curative instruction. It was inadvertently published by the defendant in this case. At this point, because it was published, all we can do is have that curative instruction and make sure we have additional instructions in our final instructions to the jurors that they are only to consider admitted evidence, and that they were specifically instructed that evidence is not admitted in the case, and leave it to the jurors to commit to following those instructions. So from what I briefly saw, I'll note it wasn't up there that long. I don't believe it created more of an issue than is necessary that could be cured by the curative instruction given. So I won't draw any further attention to it on behalf of the jurors hearing about it, other than a general new instruction that will come with them for deliberations about what may be considered. On the point of what apparently was said by Mr. Pryor to the bailiffs, I'll just indicate, of course, the bailiffs are in charge of the courtroom at the direction of the court. And I'll instruct all counsel to be respectful of the bailiffs as they do their jobs, and in particular to not make any sort of comments in front of the jurors that may confuse the jurors or concern the jurors as it relates to how the bailiffs are doing their job in here. I have full confidence in the way the bailiffs have handled this courtroom throughout the trial, and so I'll just leave it up to counsel to follow that instruction as well and refrain from any types of editorial type comments in front of jurors, please, while this trial goes on. So those are the issues we needed to discuss outside the presence of the jurors. At this time, then, we'll continue with the cross-examination. Is the defense going to be ready to proceed and have the jurors returned?
Yes, Judge. And for a clarification, we are ending at 3:15 if I'm going to try to get through this.
We are going to end at 3:15 today because okay. We've got another hearing at 3:30.
Okay.
How long will that take?
Just a couple.
All right. We'll go ahead and go off the record for now as we reset a device. We'll have the jurors brought in while we're doing that, and then we'll continue on with evidence until 3:15. So we can have the jurors brought in now. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. And it's fine. It's the moderator.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bailiff. Please be seated. All right. Ms. Gibbs is still under oath. Mr. Pryor is conducting cross-examination. As I mentioned, we'll go for another 25 minutes here till 3:15 and conclude, since the court's going to have another hearing outside the presence of the jurors later today.
Judge, the technical issues are resolved at this point.
Yes, you can proceed.
Namaskar, I need just a clarification if I could. You talked about how light and dark are not, are they something that's not within your practice? Is that what I understand?
And not the way that they described light and darkness in my beliefs as a member of the church. I would just talk about light being the light of Christ.
Okay. So in other words, identifying someone as light or dark would not be something that you would do?
No.
Okay. And discussing the issue of portals, there was some discussion with the prosecuting attorney about portals. And and please bear with me. A portal is what exactly?
It was made known to me by Lori that portals are something they created by saying some type of prayer, I think, and creating a place where they could communicate spiritually to each other.
Okay. And that's not something that you would practice as well?
No.
Okay. Okay. I noticed that a lot of your testimony when you were talking about zombies and talking about information about various levels of light and dark, and frankly, most of the subject was information that was conveyed to you by Lori. Would that be fair?
Yes.
You didn't talk to Chad very often, did you?
No.
And in all the time that you knew him, I would say what, less than a handful of times you actually spoke with him, right?
I'd say so.
Would that be fair?
Be fair.
Okay. So when I was listening to your testimony earlier with Ms. Blake, a comment that you continually made was that Chad told Lori and Lori told me, and I may be paraphrasing that the wrong way, but in essence, that's what you were saying, right?
Correct.
So I guess what I'm asking is you're relying on what Lori Vallow is telling you, and you don't really know whether what she's telling you is the truth or not, do you?
I would say I wouldn't know 100% sure, no.
Okay. Because Lori has lied to you before.
Yes.
And she's been untruthful to you about other things, correct?
Yes.
I mean, you talked a little bit about the whereabouts of JJ, and in your view, she lied to you about that, right?
That's right.
Okay. Now, when I listened to the tape recording, remember the tape that Ms. Blake played at the end of the conversation that you tape recorded? Now, prior to that tape recording, had you talked to any law enforcement agency about recording that conversation?
Never.
And I noticed it was interesting because before you started the tape recording, you identified who you were and time and all of that and made a very clear, succinct record of what was going on. And it sounds like you just deliberately knew in advance you were going to tape. Is that correct?
Well, yeah.
Okay. So you knew what the subject was going to be and you knew what to answer and what not to answer while you were on that tape, right?
I had no idea what the conversation, how it was going to flow. So I can't say that that's true.
Well, you knew the subject of what the conversation was because you initiated that.
Sure.
Okay. And when I listened to the tape, and if we have to listen to it again, we can. But when I listened to the tape, it sounded like Lori's responses were in the singular. And what I mean by that, as an example, I had to move her to somewhere else, talking about Tylee. It wasn't they had to move her, it was I had to move her. Do you recall that?
I believe so.
And then the other one again in the singular, I will do whatever the Lord needs me to do.
Yes.
Okay. So again, in the singular, when you and Lori and I guess Chad was in the background, he talked a little bit about his experiences with Tammy, but Lori Vallow's comments were not we will or they will, it was I will in the singular. Do you recall that?
That sounds familiar.
Right. Yeah. Well, do you need to listen to it again to make sure, or are you pretty clear?
Well,
okay. Good. And then when you talk to Lori about Alex, about saying the things that Alex did about, you know, you don't want to know, okay? She said again in the singular, I don't know why he would say that. Not we don't know why he would say that. It's I don't know why he would say that, right?
Right.
Okay, now, initially when the investigation started over the disappearance of JJ, and that was close to Thanksgiving time, correct?
Between October and November, yeah.
Well, the end of November when the police showed up, right?
Yeah.
You remember that, right?
I do.
Okay, so you do have a recollection of about that when this took place, right? Okay. Basically, you received a call from the police, correct?
Correct.
And initially, it wasn't that you kind of lied. You lied to the police officers. Remember that?
Yeah, I
do. So when you said you kind of maybe weren't truthful in the beginning, no, you lied to the police.
Sure.
Correct?
Sure.
Okay. And then after you told the police a lie about having JJ with you, correct? You then, after some more prompting from the police, you sort of cleared that up, right?
Objection, Your Honor, misstates the prior testimony.
Sustained.
Okay, so how did that play out then after you initially lied to the police? How did it play out that you then corrected yourself with law enforcement after your initial lie?
I went to see them personally and talked to them about everything I knew.
Okay. And that's when you realized that, oh, well, my lie to them isn't going to hold up. I better sort of tell them something else, right?
Objection, Your Honor. Argumentative and mischaracterizes the prior testimony.
Sustained.
So the purpose of going back to the police was to clear up your initial lie, correct?
No.
Oh, it wasn't?
No.
Well, the purpose of going back to the police was to tell them you felt they needed to hear, right?
I felt an obligation to share everything I knew with them.
Okay. And I guess that obligation wasn't so strong when you initially told the police the lie that you had JJ, right?
It was a conflict within me.
Okay. And that conflict within you said, it's more important that I lie for Lori Vallow than it is I tell the police the truth, right?
Objection, Your Honor. Argumentative and misstates the prior testimony.
That is overruled. Hold on. There wasn't an answer.
Sorry, Judge.
Sorry.
You need me to have her recite the question again? Ms. Clerk, could you state the question for me, please?
I don't know how to answer that other than say it was a difficult moment for me, and that's just what I did.
Okay, so is being here today a difficult moment for you?
Of course it is.
Okay, and you're having some struggles because... you're having some struggles because at some point you know you have information about JJ Vallow and about what happened to JJ Vallow, correct?
Best of my knowledge.
That's what?
Best of my knowledge. I'm sharing all that I know about.
Okay. So I want to go to the timeline of Chad Daybell a little bit.
Okay.
And you talked about arriving in Rexburg for the weekend of the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, that time frame. I guess Monday was the 23rd, Sunday was the 22nd, 21st on Saturday, 20th on Friday, 19th. And my recollection when I reviewed all of the reports and the other testimony that you've given, I was under the impression you arrived on Thursday.
I thought it was Wednesday, but it could have been Thursday. It's been too long to remember.
Okay, so the comment that you said that you saw Chad Daybell 2, 3, or 4 times previously in testimony, you're not sure about that either, correct?
Well, I can recall certain moments. I'd have to sit down and recall every time I saw him and think about that a little bit more.
Okay, so we aren't clear about how many times we saw Chad on that weekend, right?
Not 100% clear.
Okay. And let's kind of go over the timeline for that weekend, if we could. If you can try to remember it, if possible. You arrived not on Wednesday, like you just previously testified to. You arrived on Thursday, right?
Is that right? I don't remember. You'd have to look at documents to show that. I'm fine with that. It doesn't matter to me if it was Wednesday or Thursday.
Okay. And again, you said you flew in?
That's right.
And what time did you fly in?
I feel like it was in the afternoon, but I can't recall the time.
And please don't let me mischaracterize your testimony, but my recollection is on that first day that you flew in on the Thursday, you didn't see Chad Daybell.
I believe it was either that evening or the next evening. I'm not recalling that.
Okay. Well, the reason I'm questioning you about this is the next evening, your boyfriend at the time came into town, correct?
Yeah, Friday.
And that was later in the afternoon, late in the evening, right?
That's right.
So when your boyfriend came into town, you hadn't seen Chad yet before your boyfriend arrived, correct?
That's not true.
No, you did?
Yeah, I saw Chad.
When did you see him?
Previous to that.
What time?
Well, it was in the evening. I remember when we walked around the track at BYU, Idaho. It was in the evening. It was getting darker outside.
Okay. And that's the interaction that you described between Lori and Chad?
Part of it, yeah.
Now, one of the things when I listened to Lori's tape, what I was curious about, and I guess I didn't understand, was that on the tape recording with you and Chad and Lori, you talked to her about the issue of adultery,
mm-hmm.
that she was having a relationship with a married man,
mm-hmm.
and she was a married woman.
Correct.
Okay, and that is a, what was the phrase you used to describe what that is?
Inappropriate, maybe? I don't remember.
It had a religious connotation to it, that it was in violation of something.
We were referencing one of the people in the Book of Mormon and talking about a certain king that had that type of behavior.
Okay. Yeah. And she said something about divorce. And I'm going off of my recollection, but while you and David were going through your relationship in the beginning, he was still married, wasn't he? Or had he completed his divorce at that point?
He was in the process of completing it.
So he was still technically married at that point, correct?
Objection, Your Honor. Relevance.
Sustained.
Okay. Okay. So then David arrived on Friday.
Yes.
Did you see Chad at all on Friday?
I can't remember if I saw him Friday.
Okay. And then you were there for, I don't remember the name of the conference. Firm? Was that the name of the conference?
I'm trying to remember if that was Firm Foundation, maybe. Okay.
Was that, well, I'm at.
I think that's the one.
I think we're both struggling to find out which one that was.
Yeah. I think that's what they referenced. It's my memory.
Okay. Firm Foundation. What is Firm Foundation?
It's a few people that got together and talked about evidences of the Book of Mormon and some science. We're talking a lot about science as well that weekend.
Okay. And that started early in the morning on that Saturday morning, right?
Sometime Saturday morning. I'm not recalling exactly the timing, but I would say sometime in the morning.
And then it ran till relatively late that night.
I think so, yes.
Yeah, I recall it was 10 plus hours of the seminar. It was an all-day event, right?
I think so, yeah.
And that was basically all day Saturday, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then we go to Sunday, right?
Right.
And my recollection is, I'm going off of memory, is everybody went to church that morning?
I don't remember anybody going to church.
You don't remember Chad going to church?
No.
Do you remember a discussion with Chad and David about going to see a piece of property after Chad gets out of church on Sunday?
Oh yeah. I don't remember him saying it could be, I just don't recall it, but it could be, but yes, they were going to go look at some property.
And after church, after they got done with their services and everybody was going to church and I can't remember if you and David went to church that morning, but there was a reference to Chad and you guys were waiting for him to finish up church before you went to visit a piece of property, right?
Yeah, I feel like he might have been the only one if he did go. Yeah, I don't recall anybody else going. I just don't recall it.
Okay. So Chad, obviously you didn't see him Sunday morning until you guys went out to see the property that Sunday afternoon.
I don't recall seeing him till then.
But you do recall going out to a piece of property and I want to say south and east of Chad's property.
I wouldn't know the directions.
Me neither. But you went out there, and do you recall who was out there when you went to look at that piece of property?
So it was Chad and I believe a man that was a realtor, and me and David. I think Alex might have been there. And then there was a couple that drove by and, spoke to all of us for a few minutes, and then they left.
And I don't recall, was Lori there as well?
No, she wasn't.
Okay. She was at home with who?
I'm assuming she was at home with her son.
JJ. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because after you folks went out to look at this piece of property, you went directly back to Lori's townhome, correct?
I think so.
Yeah, and we don't know where Chad went. He went home, I presume, right? You don't know.
I don't remember. Yeah.
Okay. So was this a piece of property that your boyfriend, and please forgive me if I meant to say husband or boyfriend, it's going to be tough for me, but your boyfriend at the time was looking at a piece of property to purchase, correct?
They were introducing the idea of purchasing it, but he had no concept if he would do it or not, but it was something they proposed to him.
Okay. Okay. Well, I understood it a different way. I understood that your boyfriend was interested in potentially developing a piece of property and asked Chad to introduce him to a realtor. That's the way I understood it.
Objection, Your Honor. Move to strike. Counsel's testifying.
Judge,
the question was asked and answered.
Sustained.
Is it possible that it was your boyfriend who was looking at a piece of property and asked Chad to refer him to a real estate agent?
I don't believe so.
Okay. But in any event, you and Alex and your boyfriend David and this real estate person and Chad went out to look at this piece of property, correct?
Correct.
And then you went back home, and that was late afternoon, if I recall. Is that correct?
It feels like it was.
Yeah. And then at that point, one of the projects that you and Lori, I think it was just you and Lori, were involved was starting to prepare to do what's called a podcast.
Are you talking about the evening, the one on Sunday evening?
That Sunday, we're on Sunday right now, I think.
Yeah, so we were going to sometime do it. We weren't sure exactly where we're going to get to it, but we finally got to it on Sunday night.
Right, and correct me, was it just you and Lori, or was David involved in that too?
All three of us, yes.
The three of you, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then you were going to do this podcast, and you did that, and my recollection is it started at like 8 or 9 o'clock?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And it went till after midnight?
Yeah, somewhere. I knew it was like around midnight. I don't know if it was after it. I just know it was kind of late.
Okay, so you didn't see Chad other than on Sunday. You saw Chad for the land. And you didn't see him that night during the podcast, right?
He might have come over after the land. I don't recall, but he was not at the podcast.
Okay. And you don't recall whether he was there after the land, though. You're saying he may have.
It's possible.
Okay. Okay. But then during the podcast, my understanding is that sometime during the podcast, you observed Alex Cox carrying JJ Vallow on Sunday night with his head on his shoulders upstairs.
That's right.
Okay. And you don't know which bedroom he put JJ in, is that right?
I did not witness where he put him, but he was not in JJ's room, or he was not in Tylee's room.
Okay. But you and David were in Tylee's room that night.
No, we were in both. Well, no, it was JJ's room.
Oh, you were in JJ's room?
Yeah, it was JJ's room.
Okay. Now, in terms of the bedrooms, when you walk up the stairs, there's three bedrooms up there, correct?
Yes.
And they're all relatively close bedrooms. Would you agree with that?
Tylee and JJ's were close, and Lori's was down the hallway.
Okay, but when we say down the hallway, that's a relative term, isn't it?
Well, they're not as close as the other two.
Right, but they're also not a long distance away. This was not a large townhome, was it?
No, it was just from one end of the townhome to the other.
Right, it's a short distance to one bedroom.
I guess relative to a lot of things, yes.
Okay. Okay. So when you went to bed at whatever time that was after the podcast, at that point, you were presuming that Lori also went to bed and decided to lay down with JJ, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then you and David you went to sleep after some prayer.
Yes.
Okay. So you don't know, really, you don't know where JJ was that night, correct?
No, I don't.
Okay. Okay. But you were in the house when Alex brought him up initially at, what time was that when Alex brought him up again?
You know, I don't recall. It was a little bit, maybe a few hours into us doing the podcast.
Okay. And then you said David had, I don't want to put words, and he had a nightmare or a vision?
They kind of felt like both. I'm not really sure. It was just a bad experience he had.
Okay.
You have to ask him what he felt like it was.
You don't remember?
I remember he was very alarmed by it and upset by it.
Okay. And was he alarmed enough and upset enough that did both of you get up and knock on the door of Lori's door?
No.
Did either of you try to locate Lori and say, is everything okay? Because this was alarming.
I did.
Did you knock on the door of the?
Yeah, I went over to her door and tried to open it, and it was locked.
Okay, but you didn't knock, right?
I might have. I don't recall. I just know I tried to get in.
Okay, and it wasn't opened.
Right.
Did you go down to the other bedroom that was closer to where you and David were staying and check on that bedroom?
No.
Okay. Okay. And then after this alarming event that was so traumatic to David, you slept in until about what time?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I probably woke up around 7 or something in the morning. I don't know.
Okay. And from previous testimony, you indicated that you took off and left at about 9:30. Does that sound about right?
Sounds about right.
Okay. And at that point, again, even though David had this traumatic experience about this nightmare, you didn't ask to see JJ, did you?
Objection, Your Honor. Argumentative.
Overruled.
You didn't ask to see JJ.
It's possible I did. I don't recall what I said to her when I came downstairs.
Okay. Well, you make a lot of comments. It's possible, but you don't remember asking to see JJ, do you?
I remember when you're meeting with somebody for a full week and you don't remember all the conversations you have. You do your best to remember all that you can recall.
Well, I appreciate that because, you know, in the beginning of your testimony with the prosecuting attorney, you were very clear about all of these memories that you had about zombies, about dark and light.
Objection, Your Honor. This is a narrative. Move to strike. It's argumentative.
Sustained.
You were very clear on your testimony about zombies. You didn't have a memory loss about that, did you?
No.
You didn't have a memory loss about dark and light, right?
No.
You didn't have a memory loss about how often you saw Chad, right?
Sometimes I remember seeing him. It wasn't a memorable weekend to remember when he came in and out all the time.
But you were very clear about all of the things that Lori Vallow told you at the bequest of Chad. You were real clear about that, weren't you? No?
I said, yeah.
Okay. Judge, I don't know if you want to. I unfortunately have quite a ways to go now, and I apologize to the court, but I got a ways to go.
Oh, you don't need to apologize, Mr. Pryor. We'll take our time to get through this witness, but we are towards the end of where we're going to get with the witness today. As I mentioned, the court's got another hearing to take up this afternoon. So if there's no objection from either side, I would like to recess for the day and resume tomorrow. State okay with that?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blake.
Yes, Judge.
Very well. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, as you retire for the evening, go home, please. Follow the court's continuing instruction and admonishment to not discuss this case amongst yourselves or with anyone else. And please don't do anything to research or look the case up so you can remain unbiased in the case and make your decision just based on the evidence you hear here at trial. If you happen to run across any media about this case, please try to avert your attention from that. And with that in mind, I look forward to seeing you all tomorrow morning. Thank you.
All rise, please.
Yes, thank you. We'll be in recess until this next hearing starts at 3:30. The witness can step down, and I will just remind you, Ms. Gibb, also you're not to discuss your testimony with others that have testified in the case.
Witness the lies.
I didn't lie to you on that polygraph, I promise.
The cover-ups.
I could see his brain on this.
The moments they confessed.
I grabbed one of the kitchen knives.
Outrageous police interrogations.
I know, I forgot the head. I wanted the head.
You have to see to believe.
Oh my God.
Law and Crime Interrogations. Subscribe today.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right. Good afternoon. We're on the record on KCR 22-21-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. Mr. Daybell is here present, represented by his attorney, Mr. Pryor. The state's here present, not currently seated at the prosecutor's table. Seated there is attorney Terry S. Ratliff, along with another attorney, Mr. Bartlett, who represents Mr. Ratliff. The court is taking up today an order to show cause hearing, and I'm going to briefly discuss the procedural history that brings us to this at this time. I'll note that this was a motion that was filed by Mr. Ratliff, who is a bar-licensed attorney through the state of Idaho, and filed a pleading purporting to be the attorney for the defendant in this case. And the pleading was filed on March 29th at 11:42 p.m., so shortly before midnight on a Friday. And I do want to discuss briefly the timing of the filing. The court was conducting jury questionnaires and preparing for jury voir dire in this case, which, of course, is a capital murder case, an incredibly serious case where the court counsel has spent a tremendous amount of time preparing for and getting ready for trial where we are now. The court was not made aware of the filing because it was not entered in the case until Sunday morning on March 29th, that would have been on March 31st. That was Easter Sunday, before we were going to start with our voir dire the following Monday. On Easter Sunday, my staff attorney, who had an opportunity finally to travel home and spend Easter with her family after a very long week, was interrupted out of her church services and contacted the court that we had an emergency happening in our case that was going. And the emergency was we had a motion to continue the trial. And I wasn't sure who was asking to have the trial continued, why the trial would be continued. But this created a tremendous amount of quick response required by the court, by staff, by clerks, by the prosecutors, by the defense, all occurring again on one of the few days we had a break as we were grinding through jury selection on Easter Sunday. The pleading the court received is entitled Motion to Intervene and to Continue the Trial in These Proceedings, filed by Mr. Ratliff on his official office pleading letterhead, signed by Mr. Ratliff as the attorney for the defendant, both on the signature line and on the caption. I'll note the pleading incorrectly spells the word motion. It incorrectly spells the word continue. It incorrectly spells the word proceedings in its caption. And when I reviewed this, I'm going to tell you, Mr. Ratliff, I was angry then, and I think I'm angrier now about what you did. However, in light of allowing you some due process, I looked through a correct way to handle this, and I considered Rule 11. I'll note you've retained an attorney, Bartlett, and I have reviewed a lengthy response brief along with declarations submitted on your behalf. And procedurally, where we are, first of all, the order to show cause for me is for you to explain, Mr. Ratliff, to personally explain to me how your pleading complies with Rule 11 of the Rules of Civil Procedure. Typically, when someone shows up with an attorney, their attorney gets to argue for them. However, under certain circumstances, I don't know that the right to counsel attaches, and in particular, under a Rule 11 request, I don't believe it does. I'll note the Rule 11 is a rule of civil procedure, which typically would not apply in a criminal filing. However, there are rules under the criminal rules that states we do follow civil rules when there's no corresponding rule. And in particular, Criminal Rules 47 and 49 indicate that filings of motions in criminal cases are to be filed in the same way and manner, and using the word manner, in which pleadings have to be filed in civil cases. Rule 11 governs licensed attorneys and the representations they make. There's been some indication of your counsel that perhaps Rule 11 doesn't apply. I believe Rule 11 does apply. I don't believe lawyers can file whatever they want in a criminal case without being subject to the representations under Rule 11, where they certify certain things and making those filings as officers of the court. To argue otherwise would say any lawyer could file anything they want in a criminal case and not be subject to any kind of sanction under Rule 11. And I believe Rule 11 permits exactly that for me to consider it. Rule 11 under Part C3 allows the court to conduct an inquiry on its own initiative. And the court has done this, not at the request of the parties, but at my own request, because I do have questions for Mr. Ratliff. And I'll note procedurally, while I appreciate the time and research Mr. Bartlett has put into the case, we don't have a party in this case appearing before me. Mr. Ratliff, you are not the defendant. You are not the state. You are not a prosecutor. You are not the defense attorney. You are an attorney with a license that filed something asking me to stop this trial when I don't think you had any legal standing to do that. And I'm going to give you personally an opportunity to make any explanation you want as to some of my questions. I am not going to turn this into an adjunct litigation under the auspices of this capital murder case because, quite frankly, you don't represent the defendant here. You don't represent the state. You're not a party. And I'm not going to let this devolve into a whole separate procedural mess in this case and create a record of some side issue that has nothing to do with the charges the state is currently putting evidence on for. So now that I've had my say about how we got here and why we are here, Mr. Ratliff, I have questions for you under Rule 11, and if you'd like to answer those questions personally, I will ask you some questions. If you don't want to answer those questions under the advice of counsel, I'll understand that as well, and I don't know that I even need any input from the parties. So, Mr. Ratliff, are you going to answer the court's questions as it relates to Rule 11? I'm not in contempt. I'm not in contempt, Mr. Bartlett. Well,
it didn't what the basis was, but it should cause fear. Was he showing cause that he thought he allowed him to be? Was he showing cause whether or not he confided through 11? Was he showing cause? We didn't know. We only learned 2 evening charges, late on the 6th, that I was told that it was not Rule 11 on the court.
Oh, was that inconvenient for you? Was that, I'm asking you a direct question, was that inconvenient for you?
Your Honor, it was only that I didn't have the amount of notes necessary to talk to. It's not that easy. I'm very sorry with inconvenience and no trees.
Mr. Bartlett, hold on. I indicated I wasn't going to have you argue this motion. I allowed you to start making it, and you are doing precisely that. I've thought this through. I'm in Rule 11 here. I'm in a rule that governs lawyers and their pleadings. When lawyers sign off on pleadings, lawyers are responsible for their pleadings. Lawyers, unless they're facing a sanction of jail under contempt, do not necessarily have the opportunity to have counsel represent them on a Rule 11. If you file a frivolous civil complaint and a judge says, I'm going to award fees because it was frivolous, you don't get to have another lawyer from another firm jump in between you and the judge and the complaint you filed, because you have the responsibility as a licensed attorney to put your name on pleadings and stand behind your signature under those rules, under Rule 11 and what you certify. And you answer those, in my opinion, and I'm the judge here, this is how you address Rule 11. So with all due respect, Mr. Bartliff, I appreciate you attempting to and wanting to represent your client. Again, you can do that. You've talked to him before. You can talk to him after. But the questions I have on Rule 11 relate directly to a pleading that Mr. Ratliff filed as licensed attorney in this case. And I have a right to ask him about his pleading that he filed. And so if you want to take a moment to consult with him, you can do that. But I'm not going to have you argue the merits of this. That will be up to you or Mr. Ratliff.
I said that I have an opportunity to speak with him. So thank you so much for that.
Okay. I'll take the time you need. I don't want to spend much more time this afternoon. We're in the middle of this trial. We've had evidence today. We're going to have evidence tomorrow. Make it quick and then let me know what your client wants to do.
Yes, Your Honor.
Hold on. Maybe soon.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, Mr. Ratliff, I have some questions about your pleading. Are you willing to answer those?
Sure am.
All right. The pleading I'm looking at, it's not been entered in the case yet. And the pleading, let me just a second. All right. You did, in fact, file this electronically in CR. Well, that's wrong to the case number, but this is case CR 22-21-16-23. The state of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. I'll note the case number is wrong as well. You got it, CR 1221. The first part I want to know under Rule 11, which requires you to make representations to the court, you hold yourself out as and title yourself attorney for the defendant. Why do you say that?
Judge, as you know, this is a template form, and I simply forgot to take that off of there. That was Scrivener's error on my behalf.
Okay, Scrivener's error. On the...
If you notice in the body of the motion, Judge, I say without permission of the defendant or his trial counsel.
All right, let's look at your signature on page 3. You signed Terry S. Ratliff of the firm attorney for the defendant on page 3, don't you?
Again, because it was in my template.
All right, on page 2... Again, a signature, Terry S. Ratliff of the firm, attorney for the defendant, correct?
I don't have a page 3 yet. I just have a page 1 or 2.
At the bottom of the certificate of service is one signature, another at the bottom of the contents of the pleading.
If it's there, Judge, it's there because it's a template form and I didn't strike it.
Okay. So 3 times you called yourself the attorney for the defendant. So who are you the attorney for?
Me.
So Terry S. Ratliff, attorney for Terry S. Ratliff in this case.
I should have signed citizen.
Citizen?
Yes.
Why are you referencing your bar number if you're just citizen?
Again, it's the form, Judge. It's a reference to the form. I'm not Mr. Daybell's attorney, never was.
You put this on a pleading. If you look at the top left, you've got your name, your Idaho State bar number, your Ratliff Law Offices, an attorney for defendant. You're telling me you mistakenly just wanted to file something as a citizen and not as a lawyer?
I was looking for immediate relief because of the concerns I had about the case, Your Honor.
And why were you doing that on a Friday night at almost midnight? You've known about this case for a long time, according to your own content here, right?
That's correct.
So why are you doing it then?
Because I thought I needed to do something to slow it down.
Trial scheduled for how many years? And you wanted to slow it down the day before trial started?
I'd also gotten calls from Mr. Pryor, Judge, for help.
That might be fine, but did he ever retain you on the case or did you ever enter an appearance for the defendant?
I did not.
All right. And you do state in here you're filing this pleading without the permission of the defendant or his counsel, correct?
That's correct.
You also state in here and call yourself an intervener. What basis do you have to intervene?
Based on my...
I didn't want to rely on the brief. Yeah.
It's set out in our brief, Judge, as to the basis for why I wanted to intervene. In the motion, I quote you the relief I wanted. I give you the grounds on page 1 as to why I wanted that relief and why I thought it was necessary.
Okay. And you're going to intervene now, not as Terry Ratliff lawyer, Terry Ratliff citizen at large?
I think it's semantics, Your Honor.
Oh, boy. Let me stop you there. It's absolutely not. A bar-licensed attorney filing something with their bar number to the court is completely different than a citizen. That is not semantics. This is what brings you within the auspices of Rule 11.
I understand. I said perhaps I should have signed it as a citizen, but I didn't.
All right. In your intent to intervene, whether it's as a citizen or an attorney, let me read you a couple of case quotes. Quote, the Idaho Rules of Criminal Procedure do not provide a process for intervention. The inability of non-parties to intervene in a criminal case recognizes that the considerations underlying intervention in civil cases are not applicable to criminal proceedings. That's People versus Ham, and that's State versus Johnson, 167 Idaho 454. And we've also got another Idaho case citing, quote, petitioners are correct that Idaho's rules of criminal procedure do not provide a specific mechanism for third parties to intervene in a criminal case. So again, I think there's settled case law that prohibits intervention in a criminal case. And I'd like to know what authority you have that says you have a right to intervene either as an attorney or a citizen in this case.
As outlined in our brief, Judge, sorry about that. As outlined in our brief, we have given the court several cases where the Idaho appellate courts have allowed people to intervene in cases in a criminal matter, even though they're not parties. That's my basis.
So you intervene, and then we've got two parties here. We've got the state, we've got Chad Daybell, and you're going to float around and be what if you intervene in this case? What are you going to be?
I'm not going to be floating around this case, Judge, because you haven't granted my motion.
Well, assuming you got to intervene, you assumed in your motion you did intervene because you called yourself the intervener once you got going in your motion. What were you going to be at that point?
I was hoping to have a hearing in front of you before the trial started.
Okay. And you said you were going to be the lawyer for the defendant or already were the lawyer for the defendant. Is that
not? I explained to you just a few minutes ago that that was a mistake.
Explain to me all of the misspellings and typographical errors in your late night filing.
I was nervous and it was late at night. I didn't take this lightly.
You didn't take it lightly, but you used the wrong form. You misrepresented if you were an attorney or a citizen and you signed three times as attorney for defendant. And that's your explanation?
Yes.
All right. Mr. Ratliff, I find based on your responses, you have violated Idaho's Rule 11 under the Rules of Civil Procedure, which I find are incorporated through Idaho Criminal Rule 47 and 49. The court would note that in the rules under C1, not, it's mandatory. It says the court must impose an appropriate sanction on an attorney, law firm, or party that violated the rule. And similar to what would happen in a civil case with a frivolous type filing, which this was, this cost time, this cost effort, this cost real loss for the attorneys, for the court. I'm going to instruct counsel for both the state and the defense if they could itemize the time they have spent both in today's hearing, in preparing for the hearing, as well as in dealing with this pleading from the time it was filed on Friday night, the 29th, whatever time you've put into that. I'm going to direct Mr. Ratliff that you pay reasonable attorney fees incurred for the time Mr. Pryor spent at his typical hourly rate, or the state's attorneys and whatever rate they are entitled to charge as public prosecutors. And the court will likewise itemize some billing time incurred in this. And the sanction the court's going to order is the payment of those attorney fees. The court will provide time for counsel to submit those. I'll review those for reasonableness before I make an order. And pursuant to the rule, which requires a written order under Rule C6 of Rule 11, the court will describe in that order the conduct and the basis for the sanction, and you're going to pay for those fees. Do you understand that, Mr. Ratliff?
That's fine, Judge.
Very well. That'll
Your Honor, if I may, I'm going to request findings of facts and conclusions of law. As this court is aware, we submitted briefing that addressed many of the issues you addressed to Mr. Ratliff in great detail, giving multiple basis for his right to intervene. The judge, you have not addressed those arguments, and so I'm going to ask for findings of fact, conclusions of law.
All right. Well, Mr. Bartliff, you can ask. I'm not inclined to do that because, again, I've got a lawyer in front of me that submitted a pleading, and the lawyer is responsible for the pleading. I'm not necessarily allowing any further input on behalf of counsel for the lawyer that filed the pleading. I don't think it's proper because I'm not imposing any kind of jail time or sanction similar to Rule 75 of the civil rules, which would implicate on a contempt proceeding the right to counsel. So I'm going to stand by my ruling that I made and ask the attorneys to submit those. That concludes the matter for this afternoon.
Judge, if I may. I am not.
I'm done with this issue, and I'm done wasting time on this issue in the middle of a capital case. We're done. We're in recess. Period.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.